What's up, everybody? My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition, and you're tuned into Kinda Neat. Thank you for tuning in again, as always. First things first, let's get the social media out of the way. You can follow me on Twitter, at It's Intuition. You can follow my man behind the boards, Ben Shim, making the shit sound buttery, at I Am Database, base with two S's. You can follow us both on Instagram under the same names. We're out here on them streets slanging them filters. Feel me? I just had my fucking biggest Instagram picture of all time on Thanksgiving Day. It got like 600 likes, and it's just a picture of me looking all fucking chubby at the table with two turkeys behind me. I said, eat well and give thanks, my friends. So I don't know how I'm going to top that. I'm going to have to like take my pants off in the next picture to get fucking 700 likes. Who knows? That might break the internet, you know. You can follow us as a unit on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat, YouTube.com/That's Kinda Neat, where you can see our guest today, Gavlin, perform her song Search and Destroy. You can follow us on Facebook, Facebook.com/Kinda Neat, and everything wrapped up in a pretty package on KindaNeat.net. Please make sure that you guys are subscribing to us on iTunes. We know you're listening. We get great responses from you, and we appreciate it. We see our YouTube subscribership growing, and we see our Twitter subscribership growing. Just make sure that you're downloading that podcast app on your iPhone or your iPad or wherever you're listening and fucking subscribing and leaving comments and rating us 5 stars. Tell us how fucking funny that Ben is. You know, Ben is a man of few words, but he's hilarious. Just talk about it. Just make up stories about how funny Ben is, because you guys don't know, because he never talks. He's the magic man behind the boards. Anyways, the other week I reached out and I said, hey man, you guys got questions, you got advice that you need, etc., etc. Send me questions. I'm gonna answer them. I love doing that shit. So I'm gonna start it easy. I got a bunch of questions, but I'm gonna start a question that a lot of people ask me and that I have to discuss way too much in real life. The question goes like this: what's it like at North Pole? Did you grow up there and would you move back? So first of all, I was raised in North Pole, Alaska. That is where my house is. That's where my family's address still is, right? North Pole, Alaska. It's not technically the North Pole. It is right outside of Fairbanks. It is about 25 miles perhaps outside of Fairbanks, Alaska, which is in the interior of Alaska. There has been an insurgence or a resurgence perhaps of TV shows about Alaska. There's a ton of reality TV shows about Alaska. I don't have cable. The day that I got fired 3 years ago, or laid off, whatever you want to call it, I canceled my cable because I was like, all right, time to get on hustle mode. No TV watching. So I don't know what shows are out there. I know there's Alaska State Troopers. I think my brother's been on that show with his face blurred out, supposedly because some of his friends were fishing without a license or something. I know that there are some dating shows about Alaska, and I know there are a lot of shows about like surviving Alaska, where they show these people living out in what we call the bush. The bush is like basically anybody that doesn't live in the two main cities, which are Fairbanks and Anchorage. And so I don't know what it's like to live in the bush. I'm city folk. Like, we had running water, we had electricity, we had heat. If I wanted fish, we would go to a Safeway. You know, we wouldn't go ice fishing. Like, we didn't live off moose meat. We ate hamburgers. We had a McDonald's, and it was a big deal. Like, when we got a Taco Bell my sophomore year of high school, we got a Taco Bell in North Pole, which was a pretty big deal. And there was a line around the corner. But I mean, all in all, I lived a pretty normal life. So when people go, oh man, I've been watching these shows about Alaska, I can't believe like that you used to live that way. It's so crazy. Like, how did you survive those winters? And I know that they're talking about these shows that concentrate on people living a subsistence lifestyle, where they do a bunch of trapping during the summer and the early winter months, and then they like have to sell all their furs and do fishing and freeze it all and put it up high for bears, and so the bears don't get it, et cetera, et cetera. But like, that's not how we lived. And asking me about that lifestyle is the equivalent of somebody from Fairbanks going, oh man, you live in Los Angeles now? Like, dude, what are the Kardashians like in real life? I have no fucking idea. Or like, you know, oh, what's it like to be a Real Housewife of Orange County? Like, I don't know. That's not my lifestyle. That's not how I lived. The top 5 questions that I always get about Alaska is it cold? That's number 1. Number 2, have you seen the Northern Lights? Number 3, is it dark all the time during the winter? Is it light all the time during the summer? Number 4, would you guys see bears or moose? And number 5 is, have you ever seen a penguin? Now, first, number 5, penguins live in the South Pole. There are no penguins in Alaska. I've never seen a fucking penguin, right? Number 4, moose. Yes, I see them all the time. Bears, very rarely would I ever see a bear. I think I actually only saw a wild bear myself in like Denali doing some tourist shit when I first moved there, like a grizzly bear hundreds of yards away. Like, we don't ever see bears in our backyard. Occasionally, we would see bear shit. moose. We see them all the time. There was one time when I was home two summers ago where I was driving from my brother's house back to my mom's house, and I saw six moose in a 10-minute drive. I shit you not, I saw six fucking moose. It was crazy. And moose kind of live in this the radius of a circle. They kind of travel in the same circle all year, and they end up in the same spot around the same time. And so for the longest time, we had this really big cow moose who would come with a new, you know, calf every couple of years, and she would always stay in our backyard right around Christmas time and make our dogs freak out. So like, we would see moose a lot. We're around moose a lot. The dark and light thing, yes, that is real. It is dark during the winter. Like, the average day would be like, wake up at 8 o'clock in the morning, it's dark. Or I mean, wake up for school, I'm sorry, at like around 7, it's dark. Get to school at like 8:30, it's still dark. You go out for lunch at noon, the sun is kind of up, but it's at the middle of the sky. Like, it's where it would look like if it was 3 o'clock in California, and it's out, and then you go back in from lunch and you start class again. And by the time you get out at 2:30, it's pitch black again. The shortest day up there is about 2.5 hours, I think. During the summer, yes, it is light all the time. The days are about, you know, 23 hours. The sun just kind of dips below the horizon and comes right back up. And so, yeah, that's a real thing. And the breakdown of that is probably about like 7 months of like pretty much winter, and then 5 months of like spring, summer, fall. They come like really fast. There's no real separation between those three seasons. They're just kind of like here today, gone tomorrow. Northern Lights. Yes, my hometown is one of the best places in the world to see the Northern Lights. 50 miles outside of my town, there's a place called Chino Hot Springs, and that's one of the best places to see the Northern Lights in the world, because there's no streetlights around for 50 miles. It gets really fucking cold, and there's some hot springs, so you can like sit in them in the middle of the winter, and the water will be super warm and nice, but it's like negative 20 outside, and you can just stare up and look at the Northern Lights, and it's crazy. There's no real way to describe them. Like, they dance around and they do crazy shit and they're awesome. And number one, is it cold? Yes, it's cold. But surprisingly, my hometown, North Pole, which is outside of Fairbanks, Fairbanks is the widest temperature variance of any inhabited city in the whole world. Meaning it goes from like negative 60 all the way to like 90 above. And so people are very surprised, but in the summers, it's really nice up there. It's very like temperate climate. It's usually about in the 70s most of the time during the summer, but it does get hot. It gets into the 80s and 90s. And when it's 90 in Alaska, God, man, it feels like you're in Death Valley. Like, it feels hotter for some reason, like you're closer to the sun or something. But when it's cold, yeah, it's really fucking cold. And sometimes we go through these things called deep freezes, where if it's negative 40 or colder for 10 days or longer, that's a deep freeze. And when that happens, that's bad, because your pipes can freeze. And then when it thaws out, your basement will flood. It's all bad. Like humans aren't supposed to live in that kind of weather. It fucking sucks. The coldest I've ever been in was negative 72 when I was in second grade. They didn't cancel school that day. You had the option of whether or not you wanted to go. But my mom was a teacher, so I had to go to school still. We didn't have the option to stay home. She's like, nah, if I got to go to work, you got to go to school. Sorry. And when it's that cold, like, you know, people always ask me like, oh, you're from Alaska, shouldn't you be used to this weather? Because I'll be like, man, it's fucking cold out. When it gets 50 degrees in California, I'm like, man, it's freezing. I start shivering and shit. People are like, shouldn't you be climatized? Like, shouldn't you be used to this? You're from Alaska. And I'm like, first off, I've lived in California for 12 years now. Like, I packed up my shit and moved when I was 19, the first chance that I had. And I've been here ever since. So to answer that question of would I ever move back, unless there was some sort of dire circumstance, I probably would not move back. But as far as like being climatized, being used to the cold, when it's that fucking cold, when it's negative 60, when it's negative 70, when it's fucking even negative 30, like, you're not outside, you're inside. You don't go outside. Like, if you put on snow pants and a face mask and a hat and a parka and mittens and bunny boots and all that shit, it still feels cold. So like, you don't want to be outside when it's that cold. So it's not like you ever get used to fucking being in the cold. Like, it sucks. So anyway, those are my top five questions that I always get asked about Alaska and living in North Pole. And like, yeah, North Pole, it's a weird little town. They changed the name in the 50s, I think, to North Pole in order to try and attract some factories, like toy factories and stuff, so that when Christmas came around, it could look like it was made in North Pole and like Santa made it, but it didn't work out. So it's still just kind of like this random suburb of Fairbanks, and it never really helped the economy. So now it's like a tourist trap where there's everything is like the Santa Claus house, and like everything there is like Christmas themed year round. I think there's like Rudolph's RV park and like laundromats named after Christmas shit, et cetera, et cetera. So yeah, that's my explosion about Alaska. And really, I just wanted to say, because I like that thing about like comparing reality TV shows to the Kardashians, and it was too long to tweet. And so I wanted to say that. And that was the whole point of this. So that's my first question that I'm going to respond to. And I'm going to keep doing it because I got about 20 more that I'm going to respond to over the upcoming weeks. And yeah, I hope you enjoyed that rant. And that's a little bit about my history. And now, without further ado, we're going to get into my conversation with Gavilan, who is an artist that has come up from the depths of the valley. She's out there. She's been fucking with my homies from Broken Complex for a long time. Shout out to DJ Hoppa. That's my dude. You know, she's in kind of a scene out there in the valley that is different than LA. She mentions it during the podcast that everything kind of feels a couple years behind in the valley sometimes. And a lot of the rappers that come from the valley are very kind of like backpackery, and they're about that spitting that real shit, you know, and she comes from that. And, things have been working out for her, where she's made some smart decisions video wise. Some good things have happened, and she's been blowing up in Europe, and she gets to go over there and tour for 3 months at a time to sold out shows. And, you know, I think that's fucking awesome. And so I wanted to have her on to talk about that. And that's what we did. So without further ado, let's get right into the show with Gavilan. Yeah, what's up? You just moved to LA.
Yeah, I just moved to LA about a month ago from the San Fernando Valley.
From the Valley, whereupon your history includes working with some of my friends from Broken Complex, right?
Yeah.
How long have you known those guys? Lee is a buddy of mine. We have the same name.
Yeah.
DJ Hoppa.
Yeah.
Shout outs.
I've known Hoppa for a minute. We've both grew up in the Valley, so I've been going to like his like regular party since I was like 16.
Yeah, because you're mad younger than him.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So what, you used to like sneak into his parties or something?
No, there were regular house parties or like in the neighborhood.
Oh.
Yeah.
Because I used to play shows with Hoppa. Like he would have me down. I think I've talked about this on the podcast before, but Hoppa's like mad stand-up business dude. So it's like, you know, when other promoters were inviting people to play shows and being like, well, can you just do it on like the strength because you're the homie? It's like he would be like, nah, hey, I know what it takes to get to the Valley. So here, come play and I'll give you $200. And I'm like, fuck yeah, let's do it.
Nice.
Yeah, because like he's a good guy that pays people, which is tight. And so we used to do those at bars. You know what I mean? And so, and I would imagine as a 16-year-old at a bar, you would have had to sneak in, which is what I was assuming you were talking about.
No, just regular house parties.
So you guys do house parties. That's tight. So you're like a 16-year-old kid at house parties, like watching people rock the mic. And is that where you caught the bug?
Yeah, to, like, I guess
To rip it?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
You're cracking me up.
Are you born and bred in the Valley?
Yeah.
So family has just been in the Valley and that's where you were at.
Yep.
What part were you born in?
And Van Nuys.
And so you went to elementary school there and everything?
No, I went to elementary school in Reseda.
In Reseda.
Yeah.
That's where the Karate Kid went, right?
I have no idea.
Yeah, you're too young for that movie.
Yeah, come on, come on.
The Karate Kid
I've seen the movie.
When the movie starts, he goes to Reseda. Like, that's where his family relocates to, and they're in a shitty apartment.
Right, right.
Anyways. yeah. Your folks are from California as well?
Mm-hmm. Well, my dad's from Argentina, and my mom's from California.
When did your dad end up in the States?
When he was like 17.
For what? For work?
No, for school.
Oh, yeah. So you like graduated high school and came up here for college or something?
No, he came out here during high school.
High school?
Yeah, he went to Polytechnic High.
Oh, that's where Snoop went, right? Long Beach?
You know, I'm too young for that.
Get out. That can't be a continuous callback joke or this is going to get too much.
Right.
So what, his parents moved out here too then?
Right.
So everybody immigrated. So your grandparents are out here?
Yes.
Tight. And is your mom, what, is she white?
Yeah, ish. She's part Spanish and white.
But she would identify as Caucasian?
Yes.
So you're kind of like half Argentinian?
Yes.
Yeah, but is that the side of the family that you're around most?
Yeah, I was raised with Argentinian family.
Yeah. What's that like?
It was cool. You know, a lot of food and yelling.
Yelling?
Yeah.
Boiling blood?
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. What was life in the valley like as a kid, looking back? I know that was only a few years ago.
Yeah, it was probably like yesterday.
Yeah, yeah.
Shit, I mean, regular, you know, just fucking going to school, nothing too crazy.
Yeah, what were you into as a kid?
I don't know, I guess I was into a lot of, like, I don't know, when I was a kid, I didn't listen to too much hip-hop till like, probably, like, I don't know, like, 17, 18.
Well, so put it in perspective, what were you into, like, Britney Spears and shit? Because there's nothing wrong with that.
Oh, no, I know. I mean, I love the Spice Girls.
Hey, Spice Girls.
Spice Girls are the shit.
Yeah.
I also love Destiny's Child.
Yeah, Destiny's Child is tight, too. I still remember the first time I saw a Spice Girls video, I was like, what is this? It seemed like legal pornography on MTV.
Don't you talk shit about the Spice Girls, though.
Yeah, so which one were you?
Sometimes I was sporty or sometimes I was posh.
Yeah.
Or just like both
a combination
like
of
meshed together. You know, they had a baby and then it was me.
Yeah. You were sposh.
Exactly.
Yeah. So you're a little girl in the valley down with the Spice Girls. Were you doing, did you have any other interesting hobbies? Did you do beauty pageants or anything?
No. What the fuck?
I don't know. I was waiting for like a girl to come on here and be like, yeah, I used to be in beauty pageants.
Yeah, right.
That shit would be so tight.
No, I don't know. Just regular shit. I was kind of a bad kid. I just didn't, I don't know. I just partied a lot.
Okay. So when did you start partying?
Damn, yeah. So a lot of personal questions here.
That's what I do. My goal is to make my guests cry.
Good luck with that.
Yeah, so.
Shit, I don't know. I guess I would have to say like 16, 15.
Oh, so just, that's still recently. Let's go farther back. I mean, were you a bad kid in elementary school? Like, did you pay attention in school? Were you good at it?
I paid attention in elementary.
Yeah. So here's my thing. You obviously utilize your language skills in your music because you rap, so you have to have a good vocabulary and you know, a certain understanding of the English language. So were you like early to read? Was it early on getting recognized like, oh, this girl has a gift for the language?
Hell yeah. They're like, yo, she gonna be a rapper.
were you like GT or anything? Give Magnet?
No, was pretty retarded.
You were retarded. Were you late to read?
No.
You were just average.
I just learned how to read like 2 days ago. I'm pretty young. Come on.
Get out. You have a reading app on your iPhone. That's like you press a word and it sounds it out for you.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right, fine. Let's just go straight to when you're 16 then. So what happens when you're 16? Why do you start partying?
You know, daddy wasn't there.
Is that real?
Mama wasn't there. No, I'm kidding. I mean, my folks are there. I mean,
are
my
your
mom
folks still
did.
Together?
No.
When did they divorce?
When I was like 8.
When you were 8?
Yeah.
Who did you go with, mom or dad?
I lived with my mom for a while, and then some shit happened with that, and I started living with my dad.
Can we talk about the shit that happened?
No.
Okay. Really?
Yeah.
So you're 8, your folks split, you're living with mom.
Yeah.
And do they stay in the same city or vicinity?
Yeah.
But did you get to like see, did your folks have beef? Were they cool with each other?
I mean, they're civil with each other, but they don't really give a shit about each other.
Anymore. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not like trying to kick it on holidays.
No, they ain't trying to chill.
Yeah, yeah.
There's beef, dog.
Word. I feel that. So when you're living with mom, were you just having to visit dad like on the weekends or something? Or how did that work?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah.
Yep.
How did that affect you as an 8-year-old?
It didn't really affect me too much.
You got brothers and sisters?
Yeah.
Did any of them handle it poorly?
Yeah, I guess by just like, I don't know, my brother started to, like jumping into gangs and shit, and my sister was just the only one taking care of me. So, yeah, I guess so.
So, brothers older?
Yeah, I have like 4 brothers and 2 sisters.
Whoa, there's 6 of you guys? 7 of you guys?
Just about.
Is it 7 or
it's,
is it 6?
It's just about.
Just about 7. Yep. Okay, my math is. Are you the youngest?
Second to youngest.
You're the second to youngest, so you're the baby. So, all of the older brothers and sisters were like probably in their teens when your folks split then, yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So you say one of your brothers got into the gangs or was it multiple of them?
Yeah, just one.
Just one?
Yeah.
What's that like?
Shit. I mean, it was difficult.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was a bit difficult.
Was he getting in and out of jail or anything like that?
You know what? Fortunate enough, he didn't get to jail so much, but he did get in a lot of trouble.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're Argentinian, what kind of gang do you join?
I don't know, man. I was like 8.
Is it like a Mexican gang or a black gang?
Oh, it's some graffiti shit.
Oh, it's tag banging shit.
Yeah, yeah.
Word. Because, well, you know, your music, some of it can lean towards like the Elements sounding type stuff. So you never know.
Which Element are we talking here?
Like one of the 5. The 5th, of course, being interpretive dance.
No, but there's like 10.
Are there 10 elements?
Yes.
Break down the 10 elements of hip hop.
No, if you don't know the elements, then you can't hear the elements.
The elements that I know. Rap is one of them,
yeah.
Right? Breakdancing is one of them. Graffiti is one of them. And DJing is one of them, right? Those are the 4 elements that I know.
Yeah.
There's only one that I really care about.
Oh, which one's that? Breakdancing?
Rap. I care about rap.
Yeah.
So when you said there's 10, I thought maybe there were some new ones that like the hip-hop gods had decided upon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So you never partook in graffiti stuff?
No, I mean, like, I do art, but I've never been, like, graffiti artist.
What kind of art do you do?
Like freestyle stuff, I guess, but I do paint a lot of cartoon characters and stuff like that.
So yeah, you're in high school and you start rebelling.
Yeah.
Who did you start running with? Was it a bunch of hip hop kids?
No, just a bunch of my homegirls doing hood rat things.
Really?
Yeah.
What kind of shit were they into?
Partying.
Yeah.
What kind? Drinking.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. Things you shouldn't be doing at 16.
Yeah.
I don't know. I guess in high school, just fucking went to a lot of high school parties. You mean smoke a lot of weed, get drunk, and come home and get yelled at. And probably, like, there was this one time where I was 16 and I was hanging out at my friend's house across the street. And I came back home at, like, 3 in the morning.
Mm.
And I went to the bathroom and I fucking puked everywhere. And,
at your house?
Yeah.
This is at dad's house?
Yeah.
Ugh.
And I threw up and I grabbed the towel. I wiped up all my puke. And because I was a drunk 16-year-old, I put the towel back on the rack.
Oh, God.
So I'm walking away like, yeah, I ain't gonna get caught. Shit. And then fucking my stepmom comes and washes her face with my puke towel.
Oh.
I was like, wah, wah, wah.
That is horrendous.
Yeah.
And so what was the punishment like for something like that?
I just got yelled at and I guess got grounded.
Huh. That is disgusting.
Yeah, that's pretty gross.
Yeah. So this is something that I learned about you in the car. You've never driven.
Yeah.
Because I said, oh, I'm going to run into this apartment real quick. If anybody comes to give you a ticket or give the car a ticket, will you just drive the car on the block? And you said, I don't know how to drive. I've never driven.
Yeah.
Why? Why don't you know how to drive?
Honestly, because I've been super traumatized by car accidents.
When was your first car accident?
When I was like 13.
What happened?
I was on Cinco de Mayo.
Uh-huh.
And my aunt was driving and we got hit pretty bad on the side.
Oh, you got T-boned?
Yeah. And then after that...
Were you in the passenger... You're in the passenger seat?
I was in the back seat.
You're in the back seat? How many people were in the car?
4.
And so did anybody get seriously hurt?
The driver did.
Eek. So it hit the driver's side?
Yeah.
So your aunt got fucked up?
Yeah.
What happened?
I think the airbag like burned her flesh.
Ooh.
And her arm was broken.
Ooh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so you had to see all that as a 13-year-old.
Yeah.
That was the first one. Were there more after that?
Yeah. I got into another really, really, really bad accident when I was 17. And the driver was kind of drunk. Uh-huh. And he crashed into 7 cars.
Ooh.
And, like literally, like, he was pulling out the parking lot, hit somebody, then tried to turn around, hit somebody, and then trying to get out and hit somebody.
Ugh.
And then fucking, when he finally got out of the fucking parking lot, 3 cars later, he hit a big-ass U-Haul truck.
Oh, jeez.
And the airbag or whatever thing blew up and it burned the side of my face.
Oh, so you were in the car for that?
Yeah.
This was your friend that was drunk driving?
Yes.
Dude. Do you still hang out with that person?
No.
Thank God. That is terrible. How old were you when that happened?
17.
17. Yeah. Man, so yeah, you were out drinking with the wrong crowd.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So did you have a moment where you like kind of went, oh, wait, I'm fucking up and like slowed down with all that?
Yeah, definitely.
What was that moment?
Pretty much when I looked in the mirror and saw the burns on the side of my face.
Oh, so that was the catalyst to like chill out with the party.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. Was your friend 17 as well?
No, he was 19.
Ugh. Older dudes, man, I'll tell you. Making these young girls make bad decisions.
Insane, though.
Yeah, that's terrible. What were you guys, what was the mission? Like, what were you guys doing?
We were at a carnival in Reseda.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, so you decided to, like, get fucked up beforehand, and then he just...
Well, I was actually my ex-boyfriend that was driving me, and he happened to see, like, another ex there, and he got all pissed, and that happened. So I think it was kind of intentional.
He was intentionally hitting all these other cars?
Yeah, I think so.
What was he driving?
A Mustang.
And he just didn't give a fuck about his Mustang. That's crazy.
Yeah.
So around that time, like, is this when you stopped listening to the Spice Girls and started getting into rap?
I still listen to the Spice Girls.
Yeah.
And I still listen to Destiny's Child.
Yeah.
And Aaliyah.
Yeah, Aaliyah is super tight.
Yeah.
I wanted to marry her. Rest in peace, Aaliyah.
Me too. Rest in peace, Aaliyah.
Yeah. Tell me about your musical journey. You started listening to the Spice Girls as a child, and then tell me about the evolution of your musical tastes.
I guess my dad, he listened to a lot of like old school, like funk stuff, like Parliament and shit like that.
Yeah.
And my mom listened to a lot of rock and roll.
Like what?
Like, I don't know. She likes like corny ass glam rock. Like, even though, I mean, I respect it and like it, like Van Halen or like
I knew
AC/DC.
You were going to say Van Halen, and how dare you, Diamond Dave.
Hey, look, I'm not hating on
Diamond
it, okay?
Dave is not corny. Some God
of
damn it.
Some of it
yeah,
is.
Yeah, for sure.
But I mean, the kind of rock and roll I listen to, like, I like the Pixies, Radiohead,
I like the
Arctic
Pixies
Monkeys, and yeah. stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So when did you start discovering bands like that?
As a kid, growing up.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. It was a delicate mixture of the Spice Girls and Radiohead.
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah?
Yeah.
That's like, what's your favorite Radiohead album?
Shit, I can't say, like, what's my favorite album. Mm. But, yeah.
Mm.
I mean, I never bought an album, but these are just CDs I stole from my sister. Yeah, like, a bunch of mixes and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah.
So when did you start, like, writing raps or poetry, or what was your okay. journey?
I started doing that around like 16, just like for fun. Uh-huh. Like my friends after high school were just rapping and shit and just bullshitting. So I
was
just,
it dude friends or girlfriends?
Dudes.
Yeah.
And actually, you know, some of my girlfriends did it too.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was like totally, we were just all really stoned and just bullshitting. And yeah, and then after that, I just kept doing
just
it.
Just like freestyling? Or
yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, and you'd be stoned and rapping.
Exactly.
That's the path.
Yeah.
That's how you get into these things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So that's exactly how that happened. And
well, did you have a penchant for it compared to your other friends? Like, were you better at it than them?
Yeah, I guess.
Better than the dudes?
Fuck yeah.
The reason I ask that is, like, when you started, were there some of the dudes in the circle going like, whoa, like, you're pretty good at this. Maybe you should pursue this.
Yeah.
Did you have, like, a mentor that was kind of, like, the one telling you?
No, I just kind of, after that, I just kind of enjoyed it, and I kept doing it, and I started doing, like, open mics and shit like that, and then I actually started to go out more and, like, did my first show at the Knitting Factory.
Like, what open mics were you doing in the Valley?
I did a bunch in North Hollywood.
Yeah.
Because they have, like, a bunch of, like, you know, NoHo Arts District and shit, so they have, like, a bunch of open mic spots over there. One of the cafes I went to was Cafe Amsterdam.
And you're, like, a 16-year-old doing this?
Yes.
What was the age group of the other people at the open mics?
They were a lot older than me.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was weird, because they were, like, book writers there and shit, and then like people that go there all the fucking time, but
like
yeah.
comedians and stuff too.
No, it was mainly like spoken word shit.
Yeah. And so were you putting on beats and rapping, or were you doing spoken word stuff?
I was just like writing, I mean, just doing my shit a cappella.
Yeah. Were you reading off of paper, or did you have it memorized?
I had it memorized.
Tight. Are you holding a mic like to your mouth, or is it like a mic on a mic stand? Like, were you learning mic control?
At that time, no, it was just on a mic stand.
Yeah.
But I started to learn mic control when I did my first show at the Knitting Factory.
Who put you on that show?
An old friend named Destruct.
Oh, Destruct.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, I know him.
Yeah, Destruct kind of, we were hanging out a lot in the beginning, and he shot me like a lot of beats, like original beats and stuff like that. So he definitely helped me out with a lot
of stuff. So that must have been in what, like 08, 07, 08?
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's when the Knitting Factory... That's like probably the last years of the Knitting Factory. You closed in like 09 or something?
Yeah.
Yeah. Who did you play with that day?
That day, it was Destruct, Kosha Dills, Rebels to the Grain, and Syrah.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Was Syrah headlining?
I think so, yeah.
Dude, I think I was at that show. Which room was it in the Knitting Factory?
It was at the downstairs one. It was just like the smaller room.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think maybe I interviewed Syrah at that show for like LAStereo.tv or something. Like,
yeah.
Oh, no, never mind. Because that was a show that me and Verbs played with. Anyways. Yeah. So we come from the same underground circles.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's interesting. How many songs did you have prepared at that time for that show?
Well, it was actually my first show ever. So I just kind of got put on and I just did a song.
You just did one song.
Mm-hmm.
How was it? What was the reaction like? What did it feel like?
The reaction was cool. I was like really, really, really fucking nervous because like all these other people were like really good at rapping and stuff, but yeah, it was cool, but my mic control is super fucked up.
Yeah. What was the song called?
Relentless.
Do you still perform it?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that's tight.
Yeah.
Why was your mic control fucked up? Explain what mic control is to people. I think a lot of people might not even know what that is.
My opinion of mic control is holding the mic right and not having your hand covering the fucking mic.
Yeah. Don't cup it.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't hold it too far from your face.
Exactly.
But also don't have it inside your mouth.
Right.
Yeah.
That's exactly what it is.
Yeah. So were you shouting that first show too?
Yeah. And I was kind of like moving the microphone everywhere. Yeah. Like, and you know, some parts I like took it away and I don't even know why the fuck I did that. But yeah.
Like you put it down thinking that somebody's going to complete your lyric for you or something.
No, I just kind of like moved it away like a little bit too far.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that shit happens. What have you learned about mic control since then, now that you're a road warrior?
I learned a lot, pretty much how to project and also like enhance it, like breath control and stuff like that.
Yeah. For those of you listening that don't know, Gavilan is a bit of a road warrior now. Like, you tour quite a bit. You're kind of big in Europe. And so you do a lot of festival dates out there and stuff, which is a very important part of European touring. Festivals are arguably more popular there than they are here, I think.
Right.
When you're playing big shows like that, are you using like in-ear monitors and stuff like that?
No, I just regular microphones.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So like after your first show, what happened? Did the passion grow even stronger all of a sudden?
Yeah, definitely.
And then what?
And I just kept grinding from there and started to do more shows and started writing more rappy raps.
Yeah.
And yeah,
Was Relentless the only song you had at that time?
No, I had about like 3 more songs.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And so when you first started recording them songs, where were you recording at?
EQs.
Where's that?
EQ, that's in Highland Park.
That's a studio or is that a person?
Person.
Oh, okay. My producer, I call him EQ too. His name's
really?
Equilibrium.
No shit.
Yeah, yeah. How did you meet him?
I met him through the same shit, through the scene and stuff like that.
Yeah, yeah.
And we ended up doing the same show and stuff. And he was the only person I knew that knew how to engineer decent. And I mean, he engineers pretty good. And yeah, he like helped me get more comfortable in the studio because the first time I recorded with him, like, it was retarded. Like, it just kept fucking up and shit. And I was really, really nervous.
So doing like a million takes and stuff.
Yeah. And plus, you know, when you hear yourself for the first time on the microphone, it's like, ugh, what the fuck?
Yeah. It sounds like listening to your voice on an answering machine.
Yeah.
You're like, I don't sound like that, do I?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
No, it takes a while to get used to being in a studio. Mm-hmm. Yeah, for certain. Did he already have a lot of experience recording other people and like had a lot of good advice for you?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he definitely helped me out a lot. He definitely helped me spark my creative juices.
Yeah, yeah. That's tight. Mm-hmm. Do you sing too?
No, I'm practicing at the moment, but I don't sing yet.
Yeah. Well, when you say practicing, what do you have, like a vocal coach?
No, I mean, I'm just doing my own little thug thizzle.
Just singing Tom York in the shower?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That's what I do too, to practice singing. When you start recording the songs with EQ at the time, did you like already have a plan in your head about like this is going to be for an EP or an album or something like that?
Not so much. I was just trying to get familiar with recording and, you know, just rapping and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, probably, like, a few shows later, like, towards, like, the second year,
mm-hmm.
that's when I started planning an album.
Mm. A lot of the songs from those sessions, did they ever see the light of day or did a lot of them get scrapped as just, like, learning processes?
I mean, they're up.
They're all up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, tight. So it was rapping and playing shows for 2 years before you put a record out?
About a year.
About a year? What was the first one called?
The first one was called From the Art, and the second one is Habit That You Blame. But it's funny because Habit That You Blame came out first,
yeah.
But then I just kind of slept on it. And then a few years later, when Broken Complex helped me put out my first album, then they re-released Habit That You Blame after.
Oh, so Habit That You Blame was the first one that you recorded?
Yeah. I just put it on Bandcamp and forgot about it.
Oh, and forgot about it, and then they re-released it.
Yeah.
Nice. Okay. When you put out From the Art, like, how did you put that out?
It's funny because I had that album recorded and done, mastered and everything for like 3 years.
Yeah.
And I was just sitting on it because I was broke. I didn't have any money and I just didn't know like the first thing to put in it out. And then that's when I linked up with Hoppa and Broken Complex and they helped me out and they put it out for me.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you're sitting on it for 3 years, why not just put it like a link on Facebook or MySpace or whatever was popular at the
time. No computer at home.
No computer. So are you very computer illiterate?
No, I'm getting better, but I'm not like that bad.
You're not super internet.
Getting there.
Which is crazy because like your shit does pretty good on the internet.
Well, I'm getting better. I'm learning, you know, strategies and stuff like that of how to like promote myself. And
yeah.
Stuff. So yeah.
Because here's the thing is that even though I had seen your name around on flyers and stuff of like shows around the area, not necessarily that I was going to, but I would just see them on the internet. Then all of a sudden it was like, boom, here's this like million view video. And I was like, whoa, like how did that happen? Where did that come from?
Right.
So like, and I was like, oh, she must be good at the internet. But now that I'm hearing that you didn't even have a computer, how did that happen?
You know, the song that got a good amount of views, I've been performing that song and it's been out since like 08.
Yeah.
So, and also since, you know, the MySpace playlist and shit like that.
So you used to have that up on the MySpace page.
Yeah. When MySpace was cracking, you know what I mean? And I had my own little thing going on MySpace. Like I networked with a lot of people, especially from Europe.
Yeah.
And, yeah, like, so that shit was going well. And I guess just mainly the main reason why I popped off so good is because I already kind of built, like, my own little thing going on.
Yeah.
And then I linked up with Organized Threat, and Organized Threat had their own, like, a good amount of, like, their own fan
subscribers
base. Yeah, subscribers on their YouTube. So then when we linked up, it just fucking blew up.
What was, like, the song called?
What I Do.
What I Do. And when did you put the video up on YouTube?
2011.
And, like, how fast did it start to grow? Was it, like, overnight where you're like, whoa, shit, this is, like, going crazy?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
It was going crazy. My homie just dropped the video.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a fucking dick. He didn't even tell me. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? He just fucking dropped it. And then everybody saw that, got word of it, and I woke up, and everybody was posting it, putting it up and everything.
Where were they posting it? Like, where were interesting spots that you were seeing it at? That you, maybe that you wouldn't have guessed where it would be.
I guess, like, on certain, like, I can't name, like, the blogs off the top of my head, but, like, I guess, like, certain blogs on Tumblr and stuff like that. I was tripping the fuck out. I had no idea that it would blow the way it did.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, well, tell me about your MySpace days. Like, it's 2008 and you're rapping and MySpace is still the happening spot. Mm-hmm. And you say you're networking with, like, European people. Tell me about that.
Yeah, I was just looking for more producers and stuff like that. Like, I linked up with a lot of French producers. I linked up with this cat named More Sounds. He's like a crazy dude. Like, he lives, like, in the bandits. Like, he squats in Paris and shit. But he's a fucking amazing producer. And I was, like, working with him a lot. I worked with these two DJs, Def Switch and Toon Curtis. I worked with them a lot. And some other producer from Hungary. His name is Broken Fingers. And I was working with his crew and everything. So pretty much just, like, doing a lot of networking with people overseas.
Yeah. How many MySpace friends did you have?
Shit, I can't remember. Guess. But I had a good amount.
Guess.
I don't know, man.
I know that you know.
I don't lie.
I remember how many MySpace friends I had when MySpace died.
Sure, I don't.
I had like 6,500. It wasn't that much. Which is funny because that's like the amount of Twitter followers that I have now.
Right,
so
right.
I'm like, I know that Twitter is about to die because I never break more than 6,500 on anything.
No way.
I'm like, no, Twitter, don't die. No, but
Twitter's the shit.
No, I love Twitter. So were you one of those girls on MySpace that had like glittery shit all over their page and stuff?
Sometimes.
Yeah? Mm-hmm. Were you down with that?
Yeah.
That's tight. Did you ever have Spice Girl pictures?
No, but I had a Spice Girl picture as on my Twitter.
Nice.
Yeah.
When you were putting stuff up on MySpace, were people reacting to it more than you thought or what?
Yeah, for sure. MySpace definitely like helped me get a good like little fan base. And then when MySpace blew up, fell off. I didn't know what the fuck to do when Facebook came on because I was like, oh, what the hell? They don't have a stupid playlist. Blah, blah, blah.
The transition from MySpace to Facebook was so uncomfortable for musicians who had become used to MySpace.
Yeah.
Because I was like, man, there's no way that Facebook will catch on as like a, as a music promotional device because it's just a bunch of words.
Yeah.
I was like, this is horrible.
Yeah.
It took me forever to figure out how to like make a fan page and shit. Mm-hmm. Like I was way late to the game and all that stuff.
I mean, luckily I made like my Gavlin fan page early ahead of time just because I was just so pissed off about Facebook.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, fuck it. If it works, it works. And the page has been going pretty well.
Yeah, your page is pretty blown up. That's one I was looking at like your metrics before we came in. You got like 90,000 Facebook likes. That's a lot.
Yeah.
That's pretty
cool.
Damn good.
Yeah. Thanks.
Yeah, for sure. So yeah, that video blows up. What's your reaction like in the morning? Were you taken aback? Did you cry at all?
No.
Happy tears.
I was just really taken back and super surprised. And then I also just kind of felt like kind of intimidated because like a lot of people that I've always liked and listened to were like reaching out.
Like
you know?
Who?
I don't know. Like Mocha Only reached out to me and like, you know, just a few other like local like artists and stuff like that, that I respect and shit.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't know. I was just kind of intimidated for a second because I was like, okay, now I just kind of have to like show that I could do better than this.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? So it just kind of set me back a little bit and, you know, the pressure definitely came on.
Yeah. When you say it set you back, like you started second guessing yourself or what?
Just a little bit. But that's just because the kind of person I am. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? But it, like the only reason why I was second guessing myself is just because like I feel like now I have to show that I could actually fucking rap way better than what the fuck you see on YouTube.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like. Mm-hmm. I just feel like I had to show and prove a little bit more, even though the video is working well and people are like already see that from there. But that's like so old. Like that song is so old, you know? So like, I don't know. The pressure was on in a sense when it comes to like showing these fuckers that I could actually rap, you know?
Right. And as a woman, do you feel like there's more pressure to prove that you can actually rap?
In a sense. I mean, I wouldn't really say that. People ask me that shit all the time.
Oh, sorry.
No.
Just kidding. Okay.
No, but I mean, like, I would guess the only difference is like, being a female rapper is, like, I mean, the respect is the same. You know, if you rap and you could actually do it and shit like that, people will respect you for it. But the only difference is there's just people out there that are like, yeah, she could spit, you know, but yeah, you'll never catch me bumping a female in my car. Like, that's just how some people are, you know what I mean? That's the only difference. Mm. Other than that, everything else is the same.
Yeah, well, being that you said the song, you made it in 2008 and the video came out in 2011, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I would imagine that stylistically you must have taken like a few huge creative leaps forward by that time.
Yeah.
So did you already have other stuff that you were sitting on where you're like, oh, I know that if I make a video for this, it'll do well as well?
Yeah.
How did the videos go after that?
Great.
Yeah,
they're like, they're still like, I don't know, I guess them seeing who, like, the people that saw what I do, they just wanted to see what else I had to bring to the table.
Yeah. Did you start putting stuff up on your own YouTube channel? Did you get your own YouTube channel?
I have my own YouTube channel, but I gotta clean it up a bit. But yeah, I put up a few things, but not enough.
Where do the videos live that are cracking for you? They still live on Organized Threat?
Yeah,
all of them.
Yeah.
Yeah. So how long was it until you put out the video after that one blew up?
About like a few months later.
Yeah. Like, after people see that video blowing up, like, are the vultures just kind of circling about, like, everybody wants to make videos for you all of a sudden and stuff like that?
Yeah, like that. Yeah.
Did you at that time like have to acquire management or anything like that?
At that time, no, I didn't get a manager until 2012.
Until 2012.
Yeah.
And so did Hoppe help you out with that kind of stuff, like picking out management or something? Like,
no.
Has he been since Broken Complex has helped you out and putting your stuff out, has he kind of like stepped in as a mentor role at all, or just kind of been like, oh, I'm just gonna put your music out?
I mean, Hoppe helped me out, put out the album and stuff like that, but Hoppe is also so busy with the Funk Volume shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? So he just kind of already has on a lot of display.
Yeah, because he got on the Hobson train and started DJing for him, and that shit's going really well.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, we do have like goals, like on working on an EP together and stuff like that, but yeah, that's it so far. I mean, he's helped me, like, you know, like, shot shows my way for when it when I'm out in Europe and stuff like that. But yeah, that's about it.
When you were putting your stuff on MySpace and you said you were playing a lot of shows, like, what shows were you playing out here? Was it all kind of like, was it like Chinky Eye Friday shows and shit like that?
Yeah, I did a few Chinky Eye shows. And besides, you know, obviously the Knitting Factory shit, you know, airliner shit.
Oh, yeah. Were you doing like Urban Underground?
Yeah, yeah.
Huh.
Yeah, it's exactly like GG and all those people. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I was just doing a bunch of stuff like that, or fucking Second Street Jazz Club, or, you know, shit like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a question that I'm going to have to word it sensitively.
Okay.
So as to not offend people.
Okay.
Like, the shows like Urban Underground and, like, you know, a lot of Valley rappers and stuff like that, it's like a lot of them seem as if nothing great is really happening, and it's always kind of like this eternal opening act type of thing. Like, you know what I mean? You're always kind of like the opening opener.
Right.
There's a certain like aesthetic of rappers in the Valley, and maybe like some stereotypes about them. Anyways, my point is that a lot of them seem eternally stuck, not naming names or anything like that. So running in that circle, like, do you ever feel like quiet jealousy from other people because they see your stuff doing so well?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, there's definitely a lot of that around, like, you know what I mean? But at the same time, that's just due to just like anybody that wants to kill it. You know, if you're talented or have anything, like, you could do it. You know what I'm saying? Like, there's a way to reach out of your circle. It's all on you.
Explain,
you know what I mean?
The scene in the Valley.
The scene in the Valley is kind of dead. I mean, it's really not that crazy.
It's like kind of backpackery too.
Yeah.
Like,
but it's also just a bunch of fucking high school kids that are just in cyphers with their friends. Like, the Valley scene's really not that crazy. There's only about like maybe three people that I know that actually made it out that bitch, which is Romo and DJ Hoppe and myself.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But other than that, like, no, the scene's pretty dead. Like, there is no real hip hop scene in the Valley. Unless you go to North Hollywood, and even that's like whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But even the aesthetic of like the Valley, when I got here, it was always kind of like, I hope that nobody takes this as like fired shots, because I'm not trying to like fire shots at anybody. But it was always kind of like, okay, for example, like when skinny jeans started cracking, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was like the Valley rappers are the type of dudes to be like, fuck skinny jeans. I don't fuck with that shit. That's not hip hop.
But at the same time, they still fucking do the same shit. You know what I mean? Like, they're still bandwaggers. Like, again, I'm from the Valley too. I'm not trying to knock anybody either.
Right,
but like, they're kind of late on shit. You know what I mean? Like, if you want to do anything, like, you got to go to downtown LA or out of the fucking valley. Because the valley is like the suburbs of Los Angeles.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Everything's, so. Everything kind of seems like a year and a half behind
exactly.
or so.
Yeah, right? For sure. Yeah. Yeah, yeah. Definitely.
Did you, like, notice that while you were, like, embedded in that scene?
Yeah. I mean, I started to notice it a little bit later.
Yeah.
But yeah, I definitely noticed that once I started to reach out of the valley, for sure.
Yeah. And so, like, when you started reaching outside of the valley, what are some things that, like, you has moving to LA or being around, like, a more LA-centric scene rather than the valley, has it opened your mind to, like, new ideas or new things that you would want to do? You feel me?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, it's definitely opened my eyes to different things just because, you know, in LA, everybody wants to be a rapper or actor or whatever the fuck. It takes a lot to stick out. But when it comes to, like, I guess promoting myself or an image or a certain style I might rap like, yeah, it definitely opened up my mind to a lot of different things.
Yeah, because I feel like I used to live in Santa Barbara, but I would be coming down for shows, like, pretty much every weekend. And, like, we used to play at the Terrace and, like, the Knitting Factory as well. Yeah.
The Terrace is still cracking.
Second Street Jazz, all that kind of shit back in the day. And as soon as I, like, got up and actually physically moved to LA rather than just traveling here on the weekends.
Yeah, yeah.
It was like all of a sudden I learned so much more about, like, I just got so much more creative with, like, beat selection and with, like, rap styles and everything, because it was like being engulfed in this whole new, like, scene, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, but even then it's kind of weird because the LA scene isn't like what it used to be. You know what I mean? Like, back then it was like Urban Underground, Project Blowed type shit. You know what I mean? Now it's just a little bit different now that the trap scene's kind of getting involved.
Yeah.
It's a little bit different now.
Yeah.
And, you know, underground rappers are trying to rap to trap and it's like the worst thing ever.
Yeah.
So, like,
you think so?
I mean, some underground rappers could do it. Some can't. Yeah. You know what I mean? But, you know, it's definitely changed a lot when it comes to music.
Yeah. So that's the thing. I still think of, like, the LA scene of kind of, like, being early adopters of the on-beat, off-beat thing. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
yeah, yeah.
But that's kind of just the era that I moved down here, too. Because when I moved down here in, like, 07, like, DiBiase was killing it.
Right,
and
right.
When DiBiase started killing it and, like, Dilla had just passed, like, everybody started doing the fucking boom.
Yep.
You know, like, kind of like on beat, off beat shit. Mm-hmm. And so I started rapping to that kind of shit. And that was like kind of the early Low End Theory stuff. And yeah, the trap stuff is new. And of course, it's going to, like, it's going to be here today, gone tomorrow, because that's how everything kind of is.
But you know what's crazy is, like, I don't know, like, I kind of feel like different about it because, like, there's so many different things you could do with just trap drums and trap hi-hats in general.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole thing, the whole, like, quote unquote trap beats are nothing new. Like,
exactly.
You know, 16th note hi-hats have been, and 808s have been being used since the very, very early 90s. Feel me? Like, it's nothing new. It's just that it's new in that now hipsters like it. You know what I mean?
Because
here's the thing is that when the same beats were getting used by Cash Money and fucking No Limit back in, you know, the mid and early 90s, it was like people were going, oh, this isn't real hip hop. This isn't, you know, people were trying to listen to Anticon and shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like the same people that used to listen to Anticon love trap now. No shots at Anticon. So the video blows up. And you had already been building these connections with European people. And so when does the email come where it's like, hey, people in Europe fucking love you. We got to get you on a plane out here.
Well, the email was came from Mike Steez. He's from Switzerland.
Mm-hmm.
And he hit me up and he asked if I was interested in doing a tour in Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, you know, you're always skeptical with somebody you don't fucking know that wants to fly you in Europe. So, you know, I asked him to send me a resume.
They could have been selling you into fucking prostitution
exactly,
ring or something.
Exactly. So he sent me his resume and he's worked with a lot of people bigger than me. Like he's worked with, like, Busta Rhymes, Ludacris, 50 Cent, like all these crazy people.
Yeah.
But he was just trying to find an artist to, like, bring out on his own, like someone, like, that's brand new. So I was like, yeah, sure, I'd be very interested, you know? And we Skyped and we talked about it.
Did he have all his clothes on in Skype?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah. Because that would have been a surefire sign.
Yeah,
like, maybe,
I would have been like, yo, and
maybe this
shit
is not legit.
Yeah. So he asked me to send him, this is when I kind of felt like it was more legit. He asked me to send him about 4 songs and he was like, and I'm going to spread it out here. And he's like, I'm going to, you know, put a DJ or just spread it to different promoters and everything, see how you go out here. So that kind of made me feel more comfortable. He wasn't just trying to fucking fly me out there. He's like, let's see if you're doing any good out here to begin with. Mm-hmm. So he sent my music out to a bunch of people out there, and they're like, yeah, we've been trying to get a hold of her. Like, let's bring her out. And they're
all in Switzerland?
No, and all over Europe.
Like, where else?
In Germany and France and Spain, Greece.
That's so tight. So he's sending these four songs out to like DJs that he knows that have.
Yeah, DJs, promoters, you know, the whole bit.
Yeah.
And what's it called?
Are they playing it on the, on like, you know, independent radio stations mm-hmm. out there and stuff?
Yeah, definitely.
Tight. Yeah.
So, yeah, and then that happened. And then in, when did I leave? I left in January.
Of what, 11?
2011.
Okay.
Because I spent New Year's out there.
Oh, okay.
So.
But so was that before the video dropped then?
It was after.
It was right after.
Yeah, yeah.
Like
yeah.
a couple weeks after then.
Yeah, that was pretty close. Yeah.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah. So, then,
so the video had just blown up, and then all of a sudden this whirlwind of shit happens, and a dude out in Switzerland is like, hey, you're going to come tour Europe.
Yeah, he asked if I would be interested.
Yeah.
And then after he sent me the resume, we talked over it.
Yeah, yeah.
And he said a lot of people already wanted me out there. And,
yeah.
They've been trying to get a hold
so
of me.
So where did he fly you in? Did he fly you into Switzerland?
He flew me. My first date was in... Yeah, it was in Switzerland.
Yeah. Who did you go out there with? By yourself?
I went there with my homie Poetic Death. He came with me.
And he was DJing for you?
No, he raps as well. He's the one who shoots all the videos and stuff. Okay. So we went out there.
Who DJed for you guys then?
It was actually Mike Steez. He already DJs and does his own thing.
The Swiss dude.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
So then after that, we went out to Europe, and it was this huge success. Every show sold out except for one.
What capacity venues?
Some 500.
Yeah.
Yeah, all about like 500.
Damn, that's crazy.
Yeah, it was fucking insane.
Yeah. Like, how did they know about you already? Just because he had sent some songs out to people.
Yeah, and
damn.
Because the video was already going crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
What country would you say it's the biggest in?
Like my music or just
sure,
the people
yeah,
out
your,
there?
Yeah, sure. How about your music? Which country is your music biggest in?
I would have to say Switzerland, Germany, and France.
Wow, that's tight.
Yeah.
Yo, yeah, I talked to you about this in the car, but when I went to France as a kid, when I was 16, like, I was super astounded by, like, how, even back then, this was, like, 97, 98, they had a huge hip-hop scene.
Yeah.
It was right when, it must have been 97, because it was right when Wu-Tang Forever had come out.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, they saw that I had, like, baggy jeans on, they're like, oh, you like, hip-hop? And I'm like, yeah, man. And they're like, oh, yeah, Wu-Tang Clan. I'm like, yeah, swag.
No,
but, yeah.
Yeah, they have, like, Paris is... one of the biggest hip-hop scenes, and like also too another reason why
there's some tight French hip-hop too.
Yeah,
yeah, yeah.
And
they
like
got good beats.
They have like a crazy ass, like they have like one of the hoodiest places in Europe.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? They literally call it the land where the man have no paper.
Uh-huh.
And it's like that's where all the hip-hop comes from.
Uh-huh.
Like all the raw shit, you know what I mean? And so that's why Paris is so big on it. But yeah, the tour was a success, and if I can got to see a lot of the world, and then came back again.
Well, let's keep talking about it because I'm so intrigued by it. Like,
okay.
Your video comes out, and then fucking like it sounds like a month later, you're selling out 500 cap venues. Like, that's
yeah.
something that takes people in the States 10 years to do.
Yeah,
feel
yeah,
me?
Yeah.
Like, what is that like? Tell me.
It's
how does it
you know,
feel?
I didn't know what to expect.
Yeah.
Like, when I first came out there, I was like, oh shit, what if nobody's at this fucking show and this is like a waste of time? Like, I had, and plus, my first day there was actually no. It was in Hamburg in Germany.
Okay.
And what's it called? And I was just really nervous right when I met up with them. They're like, yeah, show's already sold out. I was like, holy shit, really?
Did you have other people playing with you?
Yeah, there was just Poetic
like
Death.
Like local openers?
Yeah, there was local openers.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it was pretty cool, man. Like the first time.
Did you see your face on flyers throughout the streets and shit?
Yeah.
What was that like?
It was crazy, man. Like, I don't know. Like, I don't know how to take that kind of shit.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, it's hard for me to take any kind of attention.
Yeah.
So, like...
Why?
I don't know, because it automatically makes me, like...
Because dad wasn't there.
Yeah, because daddy wasn't
I'm
there.
I'm just kidding.
But, I mean, I don't know. It's just how I am.
Why? Are you shy?
Sometimes.
I mean, you seem kind of shy. It took you a while to start giving me more than one-word answers. Feel me?
Yeah, I could be... Yeah, I mean, it makes me a little shy.
Yeah.
And, like, it also just... I don't know. Just not used to that kind of shit. You know what I mean? Just... I feel weird about it. But it's also really amazing to see all these people, like, that really love my music.
Yeah.
It's fucking heartwarming. And it just makes, like... I don't know. It's kind of hard to explain in words, but... it just definitely made me push a lot harder.
Is it one of those things where the song with the video, when it comes on, like, do people go fucking apeshit for, like, this is the one we've been waiting for?
Yeah.
That's tight, man.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah. The tightest show was in Paris, and it was on my birthday.
Yeah.
And throughout the whole trip, I was looking for Crown Royal. Mm-hmm. And they finally, that was the only spot that had Crown Royal. And I got super fucking wasted, and what's it called? I came out and they sang Happy Birthday to me.
Crown Royal, that's that classy hood shit.
Yeah.
That's probably been your favorite drink since the throwing up on the towel event.
Yeah, exactly.
Like the first show where it's like a 500 cap venue and it's sold out, like, do you walk up to the venue and people are recognizing you? Like, oh my God, is that her?
Mm-hmm,
man,
mm-hmm.
That's so crazy.
It was fucking nuts.
Yeah, so what's it like after you're in Europe and you're touring and you're like kind of fucking hood famous, and then you come back to the States and it's just like you're just Audrey again? What's that like?
It's cool, man. I mean, I still push, it makes me push harder to promote myself out here.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? Like, I've definitely been making my connects since I've came back, because I already know I got Europe on lock, so I'm pushing to do a summer tour out here in Los Angeles.
Yeah, where are you trying to go?
I'm trying to hit fucking the Bay, mm-hmm. at Santa Barbara or fucking San Francisco.
Shout out to Velvet Jones.
Yeah, you know, just all those kind of places. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
How many times have you been out to Europe since then?
Three times.
Three times. And each mm-hmm. time you've toured for how long?
The first one was like 2.5 weeks. Second one, same thing, 2.5 weeks. Third one, 3 fucking months.
3 months?
Yeah.
You just have one person that you're touring with?
No, like, each time I always had someone with me.
Yeah.
And the third one, I actually had, a DJ and 2 MCs and, sister.
Who'd you take? Shout them out.
I had Poetic Death, Papa J, and DJ Dell Plates, and my sister Olivia.
Shout out to Olivia. Damn, so you got to the point where it's like, yo, we're touring for 3.5 months. I'm bringing an entourage.
Yeah.
Did you start, like, putting fancy shit on your rider? Like, I'm like, yo, I want a fucking all-white room with white roses and only green M&Ms.
No way. No? I was just like, give me food, you know?
Yeah. By the third time that you're touring Europe and you're doing it for 3.5 months, did you learn any touring tricks?
I guess pack light.
Yeah.
And, always eat healthy.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Because, like, you don't really get have time to exercise.
Well, that time, there was a lot of downtime.
Really?
Yeah, unfortunately. I mean, the tour went well, but, like, there was, like, 1 month where we just didn't do shit.
And, oh.
Yeah, and that was, like, it went well, but it was also due to poor planning.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
But well, what'd you do during that month?
During that month, I did a lot of working out.
Yeah.
And, what's it called? You know, I hung out with, like, friends. Because I lived in Switzerland for, like, a month. I had my own apartment and everything.
Oh, so you stayed in Switzerland the whole time?
Just for that month, yes.
Yeah.
And then I, you know, recorded a lot and stuff like that. Yeah.
Yeah. Tell me more tricks of the trade. I know that you got them. I know that it's like, oh, you fucking, do you put, like, socks on your rider so you don't ever have to do laundry?
I'm not a snob when it comes to the rider. Just as long as you bring me my food and alcohol, we're good.
Yeah, that's it.
Yeah.
Really? So
yeah.
Pack light, how light? One bag?
Yeah.
What do you put
in like one, like, suitcase.
What do you put in the bag? What do you have with you? How many outfits?
A lot, but I say pack light now because I fucked up by packing too much.
Right, right.
But, I just bought, like, a bunch of underwear and a bunch of socks and a bunch of hygiene shit.
Yeah.
And I brought, like, I don't know, certain things from the States that I can't find out there.
Like what?
You know what I mean? Like Tums and stuff like that.
Hair wax.
Yeah. You know, hairspray.
Yeah.
And all that bullshit. But
nice.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely pack light is important.
Yeah.
I always end up overpacking.
Yeah, me too.
How much merch do you take out with you?
I took a good amount. Like,
you got
t-shirts
and sweatshirts and all kinds of shit?
Yeah, t-shirts, sweatshirts, CDs, and pins.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
How does it do out there?
It does pretty good.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Nice.
Pretty good.
That's good. Talk to me about being shy. Why are you shy? Are you are you an introvert?
No, I mean, I'm only shy sometimes, you know, but I don't know. I guess it's... I've always been that way since a kid, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know why. It's always been that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Does being on stage help that?
Yeah. I mean, on stage, I'm not shy at all.
Really?
Like, that's a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. The only time, like, I'll do nervous things, like crack a stupid joke that nobody understands, and I'm like, ah! But I mean, like, that's about it.
Why?
You know?
What would make you do that? Just, like, an awkward moment of silence?
Yeah, like between tracks and shit.
Yeah,
yeah,
yeah. What's your stage banter like between tracks, other than corny jokes?
I'll be like, I don't know, make the crowd chant something.
Yeah. Okay. So yeah,
or I'll just talk to them.
There's a good
general.
Question. Now that you're like becoming a seasoned road warrior, touring a lot, do you find your whole set being somewhat choreographed, or do you kind of like wing it between songs every time?
You know, through this last tour, I learned a lot doing, like, when it comes to stage work and stuff like that. So, yeah, I definitely do a lot of jumping, a lot of running around and shit like that.
Yeah.
I throw water at people, throw shirts at people.
Yeah.
And shit like that.
Well, see, like, having toured with some people that are, like, super road warriors, like, a lot of people, when they go to a show, they think they're seeing... They're thinking that everything is kind of spontaneous because maybe it feels spontaneous. But the truth be told is like pretty much when you're playing the same show for fucking 30 nights in a row, you do the same shit every show.
Yeah.
You just change the city's name. You know what I mean? So yeah, it's like, all right, come on, Indianapolis.
But, you know,
I want you to do this.
It depends on like where you're at. Like, because there's been certain countries I went to that like weren't in the greatest conditions. Like when I went to Naples, it was I went like to the hood in Naples.
Yeah.
And like... That was probably the most touching show I've ever been to in my life.
Why?
Because the economy is not doing well out there.
Yeah.
And my tickets were 30 euros a piece. And it sold out.
So that's like 60 bucks.
Yeah.
Damn.
And it sold out. And like these people, like who knows what they make a week.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And so you could tell it was like really genuine.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like when you go to certain places like that, you got to do your homework because they respect that kind of shit.
Yeah.
You know, and for that time, it was soccer season. And like from time to time, like on this was a first tour. I liked to say things to them in their language. And
so you would try to like learn some local lingo.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And when I went up there, I said, Forza Napoleon. And I sang their soccer anthem, which was the White Stripes. And like pretty much you just stomp and go boom, boom, boom. And they were going fucking crazy. And then after the show was over, they sang to me.
Oh, what did they sing?
Some Italian song. It was fucking crazy. Like, that was just really touching. And
did
that was
you,
the only
you get
venue.
A little, did you get a little misty eyed?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah, for sure.
For sure.
Yeah.
That was like the most amazing experience I've ever had in my life.
Yeah.
And I truly felt like, I mean, all these shows, I appreciate all of them. Like they're all like a great part of my journey, but that one in particular, just because like these people don't have that much money.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And like they actually spent their fucking money to see me.
Yeah.
And they sang to me.
Yeah.
And that was the only venue where I was able to walk around and fucking party with them.
Oh, tight.
Yeah, so, like, they let me behind the bar, you know, like, the whole bit, it was really, really nice. And it was, like, in the hood spot. And it just, you know, it took me back home a little bit.
Yeah, yeah. What was the worst show out there?
Oh. See, now people are going to get mad
at
me.
Well, no, you don't have to name the city, but just tell me about the situation that made it the worst show.
Okay, worst place. I mean, it wasn't, fucking A. It wasn't the worst show. It was just, fucking, I'm going to say, when I went to Poland.
Yeah.
Fucking, you know, they had these bum ass dumplings and all that shit's good. But, you know, Poland was amazing. The show went good, but I just don't think the people, local people, wanted us there.
Why?
There's a lot of racism.
Oh, so they didn't like you because you're brown?
Yeah.
Really?
And I had like a black dude with me, two Hispanic dudes, and another Hispanic chick.
So it was all white people other than you guys?
Yeah.
Wow.
And the craziest shit is we were taking the tram, right? To like, because we're like, you know, exploring the city and shit like that. And this guy sat in front of me and he looked back to me and like all my friends. And then he went up in front of this chick and he opened the window and he slammed it shut. So, and then the window broke. Like it's like the glass shattered all over some chick.
Yeah.
And he turned around and looked at us and kind of shrugged his shoulders like, what of it? And we're like, okay, you're fucking completely insane. Like,
that's strange.
And so I changed seats with my manager. He sat in front of me.
Yeah.
And then right when he saw that, he walked out. And that was crazy. And like, you know,
that's scary.
And we came into this restaurant to go sit down, but we came in talking like normal people do.
Yeah.
This chick turns around and goes, shh.
Oh,
and I was
really?
Like, you fucking cunt. I'm not going to shut up. But yeah,
Poland needs to get a trip together race wise.
Yeah, I mean, you know, but this like another thing that it was also pretty amazing to be there too because there's so much fucking history in Poland.
Yeah.
But. I mean, the show was a success. The people were very loving.
So the people
everything.
At the show were cool. Yeah. They're like, they feel the vibe. It's just like...
If you go walk around that neighborhood...
Racist dudes on the tram
if
that
you're
are
not
feeling
fucking
it.
White.
Yeah.
Kind of difficult.
That's crazy. Wow. Any other good funny tour stories?
Huh. Let's see. I would have to say, like, one of the craziest shit was when we did this festival in Czech Republic on the last tour we just went to called Hip Hop Camp... And
wait, the festival in the Czech Republic is called Hip Hop Camp?
Yeah.
That is so backpacker.
Yeah. Hip hop camp. Yep. And it's just like straight hip hop festival.
Yeah.
And it's cool though, because Kendrick Lamar headlined and got to like meet a lot of big people.
Yeah.
And it was just funny because you see all these local LA rappers or California rappers
like who?
Over here overseas. Like there was Murs, there was LP, fucking Ari the Rugged Man, there's Kendrick, there's fucking lots of different people.
Yeah.
And they were all super cool. I mean, I didn't get to meet Kendrick because, you know, he's Kendrick, but yeah.
Well, I'm sure like Murs knows who you are. He's very up on shit.
Right.
Yeah.
That was just crazy to see all these cats at us overseas.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Just to be chilling, like, okay, like everybody's in a different mode.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because what happens overseas, people don't know back home.
Right.
You know?
Like, I feel like at festivals in the States, there's probably a certain amount of competition or competitiveness, I suppose.
Yeah.
Maybe even a bit of like, I guess what I'm saying is I would imagine when you see all those dudes like that over in Europe, there's probably more camaraderie because it's kind of like, oh, hey, we're all Americans here doing it.
Yeah.
It's not like, you know, at paid dues when you're backstage, it's probably like, oh, fucking, why is that person here? Like, fuck that guy or this, that, the other.
Exactly.
You feel me?
Exactly. Yeah. So it was a lot more humble, but still a little bit different.
Yeah.
The most crazy experience I had there, fucking, we were chilling with RA. And what's it called? He happened to sprain his ankle. So he's been performing in wheelchairs.
Oh, yeah.
And we're chilling with him, and he's a super cool guy. And he was like, yo, you guys down to back me up? Because I can't just be rolling around this fucking wheelchair. I need some help.
Yeah.
I was like, yeah, sure. Like, I'd love to do that. This guy easily has like 20,000 people in the crowd.
Right.
So it was me, Poetic Death, and Yara Bravo. She's also like pretty big out there and also out here. But what's it called? He was like, y'all are shameless, right? I was like, how shameless are we talking? And he was like, nothing sexual. I was like, okay, we're good.
Yeah.
And then, so we went up there and he had props. He had raw steaks. He had fucking frisbees and all this crazy shit. And he's like, I just need you guys to go fucking crazy. And
throw
like,
steaks at people?
Yeah.
Fuck.
So like we fucking, we practiced his set for like, just got a little good idea of what he wants us to back him up on. And he wanted me and Yara Bravo to do like the Kid and Play dance to one of his songs and shit. So we did that. And fucking, I was like throwing frisbees in the crowd. One of them like just went around, fucking hit this guy in the head, fucking throwing steaks in the crowd and throwing water in people's faces. And it was a huge fucking crowd. And we were just like running back and forth, like going. I was like, that was the most active I've ever been on stage.
Yeah.
I just kept trying to run, like, you know, just trying to back him up because he's a crazy fucking performer.
Yeah.
So that shit was crazy.
Yeah. What would have been great is if you're like, yeah, so I threw a steak out in the crowd and then somebody threw it back and it was fully cooked.
That would have been awesome. Oh, man.
That would have been hilarious.
It came back in like 5 seconds. Yeah. Makes no sense.
So now that you're home, are you working on new music?
Yeah. I'm actually working on my third album called Modest Confidence.
Modest Confidence. What's it like?
This one's a little bit different. It's a bit more personal. It's not me just rapping about rap like I usually do. Mm-hmm. And there's only about like 4 boom bap songs on there. The rest of them are all new age sounds. Mm-hmm. And yeah, it's definitely a stepping stone to my transition of this new thing I'm trying to do with myself.
What is the new thing you're trying to do with yourself?
I'm trying to stray away from the boom bap.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I always love it. Like, I mean, people that have heard
that. But do you feel kind of confined by the boom bap?
Yeah, a little bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I mean, boom bap fans are fickle. Like, if you're not spitting that real shit, they don't like you no more.
Yeah.
And that can be scary.
Yeah, it can be.
Yeah.
But you know what? I'm still young and I still got lots of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, honestly, as an artist, you gotta fucking grow. You can't do the same shit for years. You know what I mean? And boom bap will always be a part of me. Like, I'll always do that shit from time to time. But I'm also just trying to challenge myself.
Are you tired of performing your old songs?
Yes.
Yeah.
Very much so.
Which I always say is a sign of artistic growth. If you hate your old music, that means that you're getting better at your new music.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah. The new sound is what? A little more poppy?
I want to say a little bit more poppy, but it's the beats aren't like, the beats are a little bit more different. Like, they're a like, see, I don't want to say trap because they're not trap.
You don't have to say trap.
But they have like, you know, trap drums and all that shit.
You can just say they bang.
They
knock.
They knock and they bang.
Yeah. Well, I mean, but I'm saying if they are straying away from the boom bap, then inherently they are more pop centric.
Yeah.
Feel me?
I mean, I'm trying to push there a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I mean, you want to write a hit.
Yes.
Do you want to write a hit?
Yeah.
You want to be on the radio, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, who doesn't?
Right.
Like, a thing that a lot of people that are really loyal to boom bap music, they say like, you know, oh, fuck that radio shit. Like, that's not the real shit. This, that, and the other. Like, anybody could do that. That's what I always hear boom bap people
say. That's so not true.
Right? That's what I always hear backpack rappers going, anybody could make that. That shit's ignorant. But yeah, I'll tell you.
I used to say that when I was like 16.
Yeah, but I'll tell you what. Like, if anybody could write a song that 20 million people love, then everybody would be a millionaire. You feel me? It's really, really, really hard to write a pop song.
Yeah,
and that's,
yeah.
Then that's why there's only like probably fucking, there's 20 people in the music industry that write probably 80% of the hit records. Mm-hmm. Feel me? Like, mm-hmm. for everybody else.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, look at a dude like Dream, you know,
yeah.
who writes Umbrella and writes a dozen other fucking hits. Like, yeah, yeah. And then everybody wants him to write hits because that guy knows how to write hits, because that's a really, really hard thing to do.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah.
That's one thing I learned, like, through doing this album, even though it's like, it's just a stepping stone to like whatever I do after this is going to be completely different. But yeah, that's one thing I learned. I used to say the same shit when I was fucking hip hop fag. I would always be like, oh, fucking.
Oh, we don't use the F word on this podcast.
Oh, calm down. No, yeah, I'm just right. So yeah, pretty much that was, and I started to realize that too when I started to change up my style a little bit, that is actually very hard to not be all super emo and rap about how you fucking feel. You know what I mean? Like, to think outside of that is hard as fuck.
Well, see, I like to rap emo, but also make it
so
catchy. Feel
me? Yeah,
because guess what? Drake is an emo rapper.
Yep.
But that fool can write really catchy songs.
Yes,
and so
can.
That's the thing, is that there's a delicate balance between being honest with yourself and also being accessible to an audience. And that's something that takes a long time to learn. And, you're young and you're going to fucking, you're going to learn that. You're going to figure it out. If you like to rap about your feelings, it's fine to rap about them. You just got to do it in an accessible way.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you'll learn that along the way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
For
well,
sure.
I look forward to hearing your new music.
Well,
are you going to perform some new stuff for us tonight?
Yes, I am.
What is the song going to be called?
Search and Destroy.
Search and Destroy. So, Gavilan, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I appreciate it. Before we get out of here, you tell me or tell the people where to find you online.
You can find me on Facebook as just Gavilan, Gavlyn, and on Instagram, Gavilan with three N's.
Yeah. Okay.
And on Twitter, at Gavilan and shit.
Gavilan and shit, one word?
Yeah.
Okay. So, whatever you say, yeah. It's kind of like punking me a little. You're like, yeah, that's what I said.
Sorry.
No, that's all right. So yeah, Young Gavilan, thank you for coming in.
Thank you for having me.
Find her on Twitter. Just Google her. She's somebody where you can just Google her.
Yeah, Google me.
Yeah,
Gavilan,
right?
Yeah, A, B, C, D, E, F, G.
Yeah, just Google that and you'll find her. You can look up her music. And if you're in Europe, I'm sure you'll see her again soon. And in the meantime, she's going to get it cracking in the States, I'm sure. My name is Lee. Some of you guys might know me as Intuition. And you can find me on Twitter at It's Intuition. You can find my man behind the boards making the shit sound buttery, Ben Shim, at I Am Database, space with two S's. Find us as a unit on Twitter at That's Kinda Neat, youtube.com/That's Kinda Neat, where you're going to see Gavilan perform.
Yay.
Search and Destroy. You can find us on facebook.com/Kinda Neat and everything wrapped up in a pretty package at kindaneat.net.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for coming in. This was Kinda Neat.
Yeah.